I'm scurrying around the home, grabbing my bag and phone for the fundraiser, when I spot a package on the porch. It must have arrived late last night. I swing open the door and grab it, squealing a little when I see the return address. It's the stickers I ordered last week. I shut the door and rip open the compostable envelope, then rush to the kitchen where Wes is downing a cup of coffee. I hold it up for him, proud of myself for making these. I dip a hand in and take out a purple sticker, showing him the saying, "Look!
Librarians definitely like it hard,"
he says, reading it with a glint in his eyes. "I made them for fun, but I also wanted you to have one." I offer him a sticker. It's a little thing, that's all, but I hope he likes it and its irreverence. After Wes sets down the mug, he takes the sticker, unpeels the back, and smacks it on his gray t-shirt.
"Perfect for today."
That's bold. "You're going to wear it to the pancake breakfast?"
"You bet I am,"
he says, and that's Wes for you. Fearless. He whirls around, reaches into a cupboard, and takes out a pretty pink gift bag with a black bow on it.
"For the game."
He already got center ice tickets for me for the game this evening, as well as for Fable and Maeve. I was so excited he thought of my friends, too, that I thanked him on my knees.
"Wear this tonight,"
he says in a simple command, so bossy and confident, like there's no chance I'd even think to say no. He thrusts the bag at me. Pretty sure I know what it is, but I'm still giddy when I yank out a number 16 jersey. "Wes," I say softly, touched. It's such a romantic gesture, a jersey that says I'm there for him. But then a dark cloud descends over me. Will everyone know? What will my brother think? Will he put two and two together if he sees me and Wes's number this evening? Fine. It's truly none of Christian's business what I do and who I do it with. And while I worry more about when the next George R.R. Martin book might release than what my brother thinks of my sex life, I still understand the complexity of the situation. Wes works with him. It's a depend-on-every-man kind of job, and Wes and I agreed to keep this thing between us quiet as we figure it out. I'm not sure it's time yet to tell Christian anything, or if we're even required to say anything, but at the same time, it's also polite to give him a heads up. When? Not ringside at a game, that's for sure. I'm about to ask if this shirt will give it away to the team what we're up to, but a glance at the clock tells me now's not the time to tackle that issue. Besides, so what if Christian sees me in Wesley's jersey? Wes isn't only my roommate, he's my friend. It makes sense I'd wear my friend's number to a game. Perfect sense. Case closed. I clutch it to my chest. I can't wait to wear it. Wes downs the rest of his coffee and sets the mug in the sink.
"Wear it today, too."
There's that demanding tone again, the one he uses when he tells me to spread my legs, suck his cock, and fuck myself with a toy in front of him. "To the pancake breakfast?" I ask, more breathily than the question demands. But that's how I feel with Wes, a little lightheaded all the time.
"Yes."
He seems dead set on this, a little fiery, too. His eyes are darker than usual. I'm getting dangerously turned on as he says,
"Put it on, Josie."
The command in his voice sends a wicked thrill through me, straight to my core. I whip off my top and change in front of him, sliding his jersey over my cami. It's big and baggy.
"Fuck, you look hot,"
he says in a dirty rumble. I suspect he'll be thinking about taking it off me the whole time I wear it, since there's nothing friendly about the way he's looking at me. I'm in front of the library, finishing up the romance display, putting the new Hazel Valentine next to a TJ Hardman, since I would definitely recommend those two together, as Wes sets out recyclable plates.
"Should I read this one?"
a masculine voice asks. I turn toward a strapping fireman with a thick beard. He's just strolled over to the display, and he's pointing to the Hazel Valentine book. "If you like banter, spice, clever plots, and happily ever afters," I say with a smile. The man holds my gaze for a beat, his gray eyes twinkling with possibility, I think.
"All of the above,"
he says, then adds,
"I'll have to check it out."
He looks around the breakfast area, full of tables and serving trays, then back to me, a smile forming.
"I'm Tom. I'd love to get some more recs from you. Maybe after work sometime?
Did this nice fireman just ask me out? Before I can even process my surprise, a throat clears. Out of nowhere, Wes is right by my side, wrapping an arm around me.
She has a whole display of them right here. Those are her wrecks.
His arm bands tighter around my waist, curling over my hip.
You don't have to get them from her after work since she's busy.
Someone is staking his claim. Tom holds up his hands in surrender.
Sorry, man.
It's all good.
Wes says in a tone laced with don't let that happen again. Tom nods at me with an apologetic smile, then walks away. I turn to Wes, arching an eyebrow at his boyfriend behavior. Color me intrigued. Are you marking me? He's unrepentant with his...
Yes.
I furrow my brow. He was only asking for book recs.
And maybe he legit wanted them. But he also wanted you. And you don't have any idea how sexy you are. How often men check you out. You have no clue.
And it's your job to ward them off? I'm not annoyed. I am curious, though. He nods.
Yes, it is. It's that simple.
Yeah, boyfriend behavior. And the low pull in my belly tells me I like it. After a squeeze of my hip, Wes returns to serving pancakes next to me as several families pass through. Eddie's on my other side, and when there's a lull in the action, he nudges me.
Is something up with you and number 16? Mr. Hockey has been staring at you this whole freaking morning like he wants to have you on his pancakes.
A tingle coasts down my spine, but a kernel of worry rolls along it too. We're friends, I say, because that's true enough. Eddie sketches air quotes.
Yes, friends. Did you know my hubs and I were friends at one point as well?
Then you understand, I say, avoiding the topic with an oh-so-innocent smile.
I understand,
he says, then lets his gaze drift to Wes.
I understand everything.
Oh, shut up, I say softly. He pats my shoulder reassuringly.
Don't worry, I got you, girl.
And I believe that about Eddie, but I also can't help but wonder about this possessive side of Wesley. Is it going to be a problem tonight? If Wes is this obvious here, will he be able to hide it when I go to the game? Will his teammates figure us out? Will people talk? And most of all, will that hurt him? I better prepare thoroughly for the game. Maybe I can figure out how to interact with him so it's not obvious I spend every night in his bedroom. I know, I'll devise a list of do's and don'ts. Like, do cheer subtly and don't maul him in the corridor post-game. Like, do say hi to everyone and don't flash my sports bra at number 16. Yes, that's a plan. But I'm pulled from those thoughts when a family with young kids marches up to the breakfast line and a young girl with her towhead hair and pigtails holds out a plate and says, pancakes, please. Of course. And did you know if you give a pig a pancake? I begin as I serve her a flapjack from my tray. She'll want some syrup to go with it, the girl says with a bright smile, finishing the next line in the popular kids' book, If You Give a Pig a Pancake. She turns to Wesley with big, expectant eyes. He looks down at her plate, and I figure he'll give her another pancake.
You'll give her some of your favorite maple syrup,
he says, surprising me. He's reciting a line in a children's book? Who is this man? The towhead does a little jig. She'll probably get all sticky. That's the next line. Unable to contain her pig and pancake glee, the young blonde kid recites the next several lines in the kid's book till her dad says,
All right, Ellie, let's leave the nice librarians alone.
Nice librarians, I mouth to Wes. Thank you, Mr. Librarian, Ellie says to Wes, then to me. And Miss Librarian, I read that book karaoke style. That catches my attention. I don't hear that often, but I know exactly what she means. That's an assistive technology the library offers in the kids section. The words light up on the screen like karaoke highlights as the book's read to you. It helps readers follow along and helps those who learn in different ways. The night he told me he had dyslexia, Wesley mentioned he'd used tech like this as a kid. Right now, his face lights up. It's a look I've never seen before, a sort of pure delight.
Dude, me too,
he says to her, then offers a fist for knocking. Ellie stands on tiptoes and knocks fists with him.
I read them all like that, with my app and my headphones.
He leans closer, like he's telling her a secret.
My dad made me read like that.
Mine too. Did you read them all that way? The moose and the dog and the mouse?
She says, rattling off the characters in the other books in the series. My heart is so full, I don't even know what to do with it. The way it's beating, the way I'm smiling. I steal a glance at Ellie's dad. He's looking down at her with pride in his eyes. Wes nods.
Every last moose and muffin.
He says with a sigh, but it's not an annoyed one. It's more a sigh of solidarity. A been there, done that sound.
Same.
Ellie gazes longingly at her plate of pancakes.
But I'm hungry, so I should go eat. If you find any more books, let me know, Mr. Librarian.
She's about to leave when her brow knits and she adds,
But you might be a firefighter.
Then she looks to me.
And you might be a firefighter too. Whatever you are, thank you.
She skips off to eat, and I turn to Wes, too delighted to even know where to start. The way he talked to her, or the way she talked to him. But I bet he won't want me to home in on the tools he used as a kid, so I say, she thinks you're a librarian.
And that you're a firefighter. Too bad Halloween's passed, we could have dressed up like that. Or maybe next year.
Those last two words echo in my mind. Next year. Is he imagining a future costume party with me? Or is that just what you say? No idea, so I stay focused on the present and that moment. Also, I think you made her day, I say. He shrugs like it was nothing, but it wasn't nothing. That was a real connection, and I want him to know that. Sometimes I think he demands perfection of himself, even when it comes to reading. He might not like it, but just letting a kid know that he learned the same way she did is a very big deal. It's great when a kid can meet an adult who learns and reads like they do. He gives me that generous smile that hits me straight in the chest like it did the night we met. It's the kind that makes me think he wants to kiss me instead of talk, which is fine by me because it's also an acknowledgement that he did make her day.
Glad I was here then.
He says as bells jangle nearby, a sign that Talia's headed in our direction.
And honestly, maybe my dad made me, but damn, that was a good series. Personally, I'd recommend If You Give a Dog a Donut. It's underrated, but might be the best of the bunch. Maybe add it to your next five reads book recs, and in all formats.
Talia arrives at the table, giving Wes an approving look. Actually, that's not a bad idea. The first ones in that series are always checked out. We should promote the next ones, Josie. I'll take care of it, I say, beaming as I picture the display already. I can show the hardbacks, but also put up a placard with info on where to download a free text-to-speech app as well as the audiobooks. And as a bonus, maybe all this effort I'm putting into the recs will make Talia's reference for me stand out even more. Talia smiles at Wes, then sticks out a hand. I'm Talia. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too,
he says, shaking.
I'm Wesley.
Oh, I know who you are, and I'd appreciate it if you'd destroy Colorado tonight. I hate their team so much, she says with a growl that reveals some serious vitriol for his opponent.
Me too,
Wesley says.
So count on that.
She gives a crisp nod. My boss, who's evidently a hardcore hockey fan, then heads off, while Wesley turns for me to serve another family. I'm a little amazed by this man and his hidden talents, but perhaps more awestruck at my matchstick reaction that came out of nowhere, at my unexpected desire to protect him. But as I watch him, his ease with people, his charm, I realize my reaction didn't truly come out of nowhere. It was born from the last month and a half of getting to know him. Later, after we've cleaned up, we head to the car. We can mark off number 6 now, I say. Wes shakes his head, sad boy face in effect.
No, we can't.
Why? That was volunteer work for you and me. I'm confused. Why wouldn't we cross it off? He sighs deeply, and once we're alone in the car, he runs a hand down my leg.
Doesn't count. I said yes because I was feeling jealous and possessive.
My reaction is slow, a blink, then a long stare. Before Tom even arrived at the book display, Mr. Hockey was jealous of the attention I might have received from the firemen? You showed up today because you were pre-jealous? I'm secretly fizzy from this revelation as we leave, pulling into traffic.
And justifiably so,
he says, owning it.
But we still need to work on the list.
It's a good reminder that we have a project to focus on. Wes is around for a few more days, then he travels again for a stretch of games. Time will run out if we're not careful, and we won't get to finish the list.
What if we volunteer at a dog rescue for the next month? Seems we should do the volunteer part more than once anyway, so it should be a month-long thing.
He says as he drives along a hilly city street. A warm, hazy sensation spreads in my chest. A month feels like it means something. It feels like a part of figuring this out, like it's somehow something that connects us even more to each other. Settle down. You're living together for at least another month. That's all it means. We should, I say, keeping my voice even so I don't read something that isn't there at all in the let's do it for a month idea. And a dog rescue feels right for both of us, I say, trying to ignore the flutters in my chest. Then I notice the sticker curling at the edges of his shirt. Did you wear this sticker, too, to stake a claim on me? He nods, proud and certain.
I did.
Funny, there's something I want to stake a claim on, something I've been imagining since I moved in with him. Maybe it's something I can do after the game. And just like that, I have a plan for tonight, what to do during the game and what to do after. Chapter 34, The Gleam and the Glow. Josie. As I get ready for the game, I can hear Greta's voice loud and clear. There's only one thing to do with a baggy shirt. Belt it, baby. I tighten a peach crocheted belt around my waist as I peer in the mirror. Yep, it's a shirt dress now, and this belt shade looks good with the royal blue of the Sea Dogs jersey that lands right above my knees. I'm wearing dark gray leggings under the jersey. Seriously, why don't hockey teams make jerseys for regular-sized people? Fine, they don't have regular-sized people playing the sport, and this is one of Wes's actual jerseys, not simply the kind I could pick up in the team shop. But Christian will never know that, since, well, the team shop sells all sorts of sizes. Christian also won't know for another reason. My brother doesn't pay close attention to my clothes, nor should he when he's playing hockey. Still, my nerves rattle around as I look in the mirror, checking out the outfit. I look like a hockey girl. It'll be obvious to everyone I am, including my brother, and I feel weird not telling him, given the way he's helped me out. As I'm tucking open a drawer to find something else to wear, the doorbell chimes. That'd be Maeve, since she's meeting me here. I race to the front door and let her in. Hello, Tiger, she says approvingly, eyeing me up and down. Yeah, that's bad. The whole outfit screams I'm fucking the forward, doesn't it? No, it's not the outfit that says that, she says, blunt and direct. My stomach pitches like a pirate ship at an amusement park. Then what gives the secret sex life of this librarian away? She smiles wickedly. Your eyes, they have that well-fucked look. Eyes do not get a well-fucked look. She parks her hands on my shoulders and spins me around so I'm facing the mirror by the front door. They do. See? I peer more closely, but come up empty. I don't know what you're talking about. It's a gleam, the gleam of getting some, she says knowingly, staring back at me in the glass. And damn, I am jealous. You got the glow on your skin and the gleam in your eyes. I laugh, and my worry slinks away for now. Maeve just has that carefree effect on people. I'm not going to stress about my clothes or my brother. We all deserve a glow and a gleam, don't we? That should be the name of a new skincare line, and you should do the artwork for it, I say. God, your brain is hot, she says. I grab a jacket and my bag, and because sometimes I like to take a little extra piece of Greta with me, and tonight feels like the start of something new, I grab the book charm necklace she gave me way back when and slip the jewelry on so it hangs under the jersey, a little symbol of me next to a little piece of Wes. We head to the rink. Fable's meeting us there. So is Everly, since she offered to give us a behind-the-scenes tour beforehand. When we hop off the bus and head up the steps to the arena, Fable's outside the media entrance, wearing a Renegade sweatshirt with the team's logo in rhinestones. "Gotta represent the football team," she says. "More like represent your own awesome design," I add, since she made this fun sweatshirt. "Thanks, babe," she says, proud of her creation, and rightfully so. Everly's with her, and she waves a hello at Maeve and me. She's dressed in black wide-leg slacks and a dark gray blouse that looks satiny. Her blonde hair is shiny and slicked back in a high ponytail. "Hey, you," she says, her eyes straying up and down me. "Don't you look adorable in your sassy little sea dog's dress?" I give a little curtsy. Apparently, I'm known for makeshift couture. Maeve nods. "She sure is. Did you know she was wearing one the night she met?" Maeve slaps her hand to her mouth. Everly laughs, dropping a hand on Maeve's shoulder as we walk past the early arriving crowds. "You mean Wesley, right?" she asks in a low voice just for us. Shaking her head, Maeve mimes zipping her lips as we reach security. After we all pass through the security checkpoint, Everly says to me, "It's okay. I always had a feeling you and Wesley had known each other before I introduced you, and honestly, I thought you liked each other." It doesn't even occur to me to lie to her, nor do I want to. "We met the night I arrived in town. We had no idea who the other was, had a great time together, and then it turned out he was my new roomie. Just don't tell my brother." Everly gives me a genuine smile. "I would never. And listen, don't you feel like you have to tell him either? Only tell him when it's right for you and Wesley. Take your time if you need to, okay?" That's the best advice I've heard on this topic ever. Fable points toward Everly. "I like her," Fable says. "I can be wise," Everly says. "I think you're right, and I needed to hear that," I say. It's a weight and a worry off my shoulders. Everly shows us around the arena, stopping at a long wall of foliage outside a range of fancy concession stands, since sports teams have such a high carbon footprint and we want to offset it as much as we can with foliage. "It's gorgeous," Maeve remarks, admiring the emerald leaves growing along the wall.
"So gorgeous."
A deep, playful voice calls out from behind us. It's a voice I don't recognize, but when I spin around, a tall, broad man with golden-streaked brown hair and a toothpaste smile is striding toward us. He's wearing a well-tailored sky blue suit, the kind athletes wear on game night. Wait, I know who that is, but so does Maeve, evidently. She gives a little wave to Asher Callahan. "So glad you enjoy the gorgeous foliage too, Ash," she says, then makes a shooing gesture. "Also, hello, don't you need to, I don't know, suit up for the game?" He smacks his forehead.
"My bad. I almost forgot I have to score some goals to impress."
His sharp eyes linger on Maeve for a long beat before he adds,
"My friend."
"Go, go, go," she says, still sending him away. When he heads off to the locker room, presumably, we're all staring at Maeve, who's watching Asher walk off. And is there something sparking in her hazel eyes? Dare I say it? "Maeve, do you have a gleam and a glow?" Whipping her gaze to me, Maeve crinkles her brow like that's crazy. "Please, we've been friends forever, and he's besties with my brother." Fable purses her lips. "Asher's your friend and your brother's best friend? That's like a double dose of gleam and glow." "I'd say," Everly puts in. "Excuse me, we were talking about your G&G, Maeve says, pointing to me and maybe possibly deflecting from the talk of Asher. "Actually, we were talking about foliage before someone called you gorgeous," I correct, because facts matter. But Maeve just scoffs. "Show us the rest of the arena, please," she says to Everly in the most businesslike voice ever. "As you wish," Everly says, and while we walk, I glance down at Everly's footwear, heels. I flash back to the night we went grocery shopping and her comment about pole dancing, then to my whole reason for having a list in the first place, to get out of my comfort zone. No reason I shouldn't offer my friends as tributes, too. "Hey, Ev, what if we all took that pole dancing class with you?" Everly's eyes brighten. "You'd all want to?" Yes, I just threw Maeve and Fable into the fire without asking, but I know my girls. Maeve is already nodding a big yes, please, and Fable shrugs happily, then says she's in. I guess we have our next girls' night out, I say as warmth spreads in my chest. But it's bittersweet, too, since these girls' nights out will end in the new year if I can't find a grant or a job. Before the puck drops, a loud, ominous voice booms through the rink, telling a tale of the sea dogs rising from the depths of the ocean, while electric blue and iridescent orange light displays of the logo and mascot play on the ice. Videos of the athletes fly by on the Jumbotron. When the announcer warbles the starting lineup at the end of the light show, I cheer for the goalie and the five other guys as they rush out of the tunnel and hit the ice, including the one whose last name I share, Christian Winters. But it's not till number 16 jumps over the boards a few minutes into the game that I cheer the loudest. It's a sound ripped from the depths of my heart, loud, exhilarating, ravenous. I'm not sure I can cheer any other way for Wesley, especially when he looks my way with a very public, private smile. The game is raucous, with players jostling for the puck in the corners, then slamming against each other as they fight even harder for it. Wes plays fast and aggressive, but never dirty, just sneaky, finding the puck and stripping it from his opponents. But even so, neither team scores during the first period. During the second period, the coach must have mixed up the lines, since Wes is out there with Christian a couple times, and they pass the puck back and forth as they fly up and down the ice. Come on, I shout, like my sheer will can force a goal. Then the noise amps up to an electric level as Wes slings it back to my brother, who smacks it right past the goalie's outstretched glove. Yes, I shout, jumping to my feet and hugging my friends like we all did it. When we let go, I catch sight of us on the Jumbotron, embracing each other to celebrate a goal scored by my brother and my secret boyfriend. I like this secret. No, I'm falling hard for this secret. After a decisive 4-1 win, the three of us meet Everly in the corridor, since she told us to come here post-game. She's ushering the players out of the media room, and I tense briefly. Will it be obvious after all? Will my brother figure us out before we figure us out? When Christian emerges from the press room, sweaty and elated, he beams my way.
You're here, Jaybird. Bryant told me you were coming,
he says, then wraps me in a gross hug. Ew, you smell.
Like victory,
he says. Then Wes comes out next, looking insanely hot in his sweat in a way my brother does not. His brown eyes are practically burning off my clothes. I feel singed from the heat of his stare. Christian looks down at my outfit quizzically.
You're wearing a Bryant jersey,
he says, but it's toneless, an observation. My pulse quickens. I could say he's my roomie. I could say he's my friend. Instead, I lift my chin and say, yes, I am. That's all. I don't need to explain anything more tonight, no matter how Wes looks at me. Everly pipes up. Christian, can we get a picture of you two for social? It'd be great to have our captain and his sister. Hockey's a family-friendly sport, after all.
Of course,
he says, then drapes an arm around me. As she shoots, Wesley watches, a knowing smirk on his handsome face. When Everly lowers the camera, she says to both players, thanks again, I've got everything. After the guys head into the locker room, my phone pings with a text.
Wait for me by the player's entrance. I want to take you home and show you how much I appreciate the way you cheered so fucking hard for me.
I shiver as I read it. I look up, turning to Everly, grateful for her deflection. You're a savvy PR woman. That is true, she says, then takes off while Fable and Maeve read the room, hugging me goodbye. You're going to get gleamed so good tonight, Maeve whispers. Yes, I am, since I have a plan. Chapter 35. You like to watch. Josie. I'm waiting at the foot of the staircase, wearing only his jersey and a pair of white cotton panties. Music beats low from upstairs, something sultry with a lot of bass. The lights are dim in the home, setting the mood. The scene is set, but before I take the first step upstairs, I bring a hand to my chest. My heart is beating so fast, I try to catch my breath. I've imagined this so many times. He's taunted me with this scenario since the first night we were together when he said in the hotel,
"Bet you'd watch me if you saw me jerking it to you."
Yes, I would. Tonight, I will. I take the first step. The stair creaks, the soundtrack to desire. I ascend, my pulse spiking with every move. When I reach the top, the music grows louder. That's Wesley for you, always having a playlist for everything. I turn down the short hallway and pad across the hardwood floor, heading toward the sliver of moonlight refracting through the doorway. An invitation. I step past it, then stop. A sound of pure desire crawls up my throat. He's stretched out on his bed, his big body sprawled in all his naked post-game glory, bulging biceps, carved abs, thick thighs, and that gorgeous dick. He's stroking it, but not with too much intention, not like he's about to burst, like he's just started, like he's weighing it. His curled palm slides down to the base, then back up. My body clenches. He coasts his fist over the head, pushing out a drop. My mouth waters. I want that drop so badly on my tongue. His eyes are closed. His lips are parted, his chest rising and falling. He's pretending he doesn't know I'm here. I'm pretending we're not yet together. Then I hear a noise that lights me up, a rasp rumbling its way up his chest. It's the sound of an American muscle car hurtling down a road. With a groan, he grips his cock harder, and I stare wantonly like a voyeur. He shuttles his fist along his length, the rhythm picking up, the pace increasing, his grunts growing louder. Then, low and guttural as he murmurs a strangled,
"Josie."
I gasp. My legs are shaking, and my panties are soaked. I am outrageously wet. To watch him get off in front of me is better than any porn I've ever seen. The man I want is touching himself while thinking of me. Pleasure pools low in my belly, and I could honestly probably come from watching him. Like a dream orgasm, the kind that crashes over you in your sleep. On an upstroke, his eyes float open. He blinks, locks his gaze to mine like a sniper. Doesn't say a word, takes a long, lazy stroke, pointing his cock my way, like he's saying he's caught me.
"You like to watch?"
I nod, unsure if I can even speak at this moment. My throat is dry with desire. He stops his strokes, though. I whimper.
"You want to keep watching?"
I find words this time. Needing them, I sense for the show to go on. "Yes, please." Crooking his fingers, he beckons for me to come closer. I cross the room, climb up, and kneel on the foot of the bed.
"Ready?"
he asks. "So ready." He grips his cock again. I stare hungrily. He jerks harder.
"Ever watched me before?"
It's borderline confrontational, a man cross-examining me. I shake my head no, then confess, "I've only imagined it."
"How do you want me to finish? In my hand? On your tits?"
The questions are aggressive too, spiking my arousal as he goes on.
"In your mouth? On your back?"
This part wasn't scripted, but the image of him spilling his release on my body and rubbing it into me with his palm has me gasping and crying out, "My back, please. All over me."
"Bet your sweet little pussy is soaked,"
he observes, pumping his cock harder as I stare, mesmerized. "It is," I say, desperate for relief.
"Bet it's fucking dripping down your thighs."
My core throbs. "Feels that way?" He tips his chin carelessly at me.
"Show me. Take those panties off."
I remove them quickly, but before I can drop them on the bed, he reaches out a hand, asking for them. I give them to him without a clue what he's going to do next. He turns them inside out and grips his cock with the damp panel of my cotton panties. My mind short circuits. The sight of him spreading my wetness along his dick has me moaning uncontrollably. I didn't know that was something I desired until this very moment, him pleasuring himself with my wet panties. It's so dirty, and it turns me on beyond belief.
"So much better."
he says in a haze, stroking faster with the fabric till he stops abruptly.
You know what would be even better?
I'm lost in a sex trance and can only shake my head.
If you sat on my face right now.
Dropping the panties, he reaches for me, then grabs my hips. Quickly, I take off my glasses before he pulls me down onto his face. He's not gentle. He's hungry and horny as he French kisses my pussy. But I'm wearing a long jersey that's covering the view of his face, so I grab the hem and loop it through the neck like a halter top tied off, exposing my belly. The look in his eyes is feral.
Now fuck my face.
I start moving, thrusting against him as he eagerly drinks me up. The sounds we're making are ridiculous. Loud, wet slurps from him and high-pitched moans from me, harmonizing with the slap of the headboard against the wall. We find a pace, and then he lifts a hand and smacks my ass. The sting radiates straight to my clit. Do it again, I urge him. He rewards me with a slap on the other cheek. My body responds with a flood of pleasure, and I cry out as I come hard on his face. When I return to reality, he gently lifts me off him, then slowly guides me down his body so my pussy rubs against his chest, his stomach, his groin, leaving a wet trail in my wake.
I need you on my cock so fucking badly,
he says breathlessly. That's where I want to be. I'm on birth control. I've been tested too, negative. He nods savagely.
Me too, negative.
That's all there is to it. I sink down on his beautiful dick, savoring the feel of him bare as he fills me easily, stretches me. I ride him like an expert horsewoman, hot and sweaty and wild in our post-game victory fuck. His breath comes fast, urgent.
I want you to keep coming upstairs. I want you to keep finding me. Want you every single fucking night.
He says, I'll be here. I gasp. And it seems like we're promising more than sex. He rises up so we're face to face. He runs a hand up my back and around to the ends of my hair, tugging my mouth closer to his. This kiss is messy, a stop and start kind of kiss, chased with a new desperation. His lips slide to the corner of my mouth and he nips me there, then groans, pulling back while still fucking up into me. His eyes are wide, dark and full of filthy promise as he lets go of my hair, then coasts that hand around to my front, across my chest and up my throat. I gasp, stretching my neck for him. His thumb and fingers clasp the sides of my throat, but his palm never comes down too hard on me. He's gripping me without choking me, and I feel taken. I love that, I murmur.
I fucking love it too. All of this. Just fucking love it.
I've never heard him like this, so urgent, so raw. His tone ignites me, and so does his body. His movements turn jerky. As his breathing staggers, he lets go of my throat while I shove a hand between my thighs and rub my clit until my body spirals once again and the world blurs. I come again, sharp, hot, and loud. I'm shaking, and he's groaning. He's got to be right there with me, but when I open my eyes, his jaw is ticking, his eyes full of restraint.
Hands and knees, baby,
he says. It takes me a second to realize what he's doing and why, but I ease off him and comply, getting on all fours. He moves behind me on his knees. Then there's the sound of a quick jerk and hot liquid splashes on my lower back. He marks me with his cum, then spreads it into me as I moan. My reality is even better than my fantasy. Later, after we've cleaned up and we're lying in bed together, Wesley pulls me close, kisses my hair.
I want to tell your brother that I'm with you. You good with that?
With you. It's so simple, so clear. There are no questions with those two words. Yes. If I say anything else, a sob of happiness might climb up my throat, because I am so, so good with that. I don't know how long we'll have, but however long it is, I want it to be on our terms.
Chapter 36. No Body Bag. Wesley. On Monday morning, I grab another book from the shelf, adding it to the stack in my arms. So that's what I'm going to do. Max stares at me like I just told him I'm going to skate with my laces untied. This is your big plan? Yep, I say, resolute, as I pass a stuffed frog chair in the children's section of an open book, having just told my two closest friends about my meeting with the captain in, 30 minutes' time. I'm incredibly calm, though, and also determined. Like a play unfolding on the ice, I can see what I need to do and what I need to say to make this happen. The moves I have to make. The way I need to skate. All that's left is the execution. Max blows out a better you than me breath. Then I have a question for you. Before he can ask it, though, Asher comes over and drops a metric ton of copies of Where the Wild Things Are onto the pile in my arms. Oof, it's getting heavier. Dude, can you not hold these? Dude, are you not strong enough? Fighting words. I hoist the books higher. I can carry them all, dickhead. Language, Max chides. You're in the children's section. No one's here yet, I point out, since it's early and the store just opened. But you're a good guy, Bryant. Be one all the time, even in the kiddie section. Max deadpans, and he makes a fair point, one I'll use very shortly. Anyway, what was your question, Lambert? I say to Max, as I weave past a tiny castle filled with beanbags and head toward the front of the store. I already left a huge stack at the counter earlier. Can you record it for us? The whole interaction with Winters? I feel like it would be really great for team morale. I roll my eyes while Asher jumps in saying, Not a bad idea. We might want to look at it when we review video. He pauses like he's deep in thought, then holds his hands out wide. How to handle the puck you didn't see coming? I groan. You did not actually make the world's worst pun. Asher flashes me a grin. I did. We arrive at the counter where I buy several boxes of kids' books, then wait as a man behind the counter gift wraps a small handful for me. The woman who rang me up smiles. Her name is Trina, and she's a fixture at Sea Dogs games. So glad Riker told you to shop here, she says with a smile. As if we'd shop anyplace else, Asher says. Except Once Upon a Good Time, she points out helpfully. That's my romance-only bookstore, but I still work here from time to time, too. I guess I'm just a why choose girly with bookstores, she says with a knowing smile. Trina's married to two of our teammates, Riker and also Chase. It's unconventional, but it works for them. And I'll be sure to stop there when I need something new to read, Asher says. You read romance? Max asks with a dubious arch of his brow. Don't you wish you knew? Asher retorts. Max grumbles. Actually, I don't need to know. We thank Trina and leave. My friends do help carry boxes, though, since we have a big haul. My car's parked at the curb, so we set the boxes of books in the back seat, along with a stack of wrapped ones. I take a breath, then check my texts, confirming Christian's address. I messaged him this morning and said I need to stop by to chat with him before morning skate in an hour or so. I give a tip of the hat to the guys. Pick you up in 30 at Dr. Insomnia's? Unless we need to pick you up in a body bag, Max deadpans. We'll get you a nice body bag, Bryant, Asher says. No more Newman, no Muffin Man, and no poker face. I'll take just Bryant. No body bag, thanks. I say goodbye, then hop in my car. Before I turn it on, I send Josie a text. Wesley, I'm on my way. Then I add a heart because I know it'll make her happy.
Josie, don't worry about me. I'm totally not glued to my phone waiting for an update while I'm worried to 5 million pieces about you.
But I'm not worried. When I first met Josie, my entire life was prescribed by what I do for a living. I'm not just a guy who plays hockey. I'm a guy who has dessert for breakfast sometimes. Who knows how to sit with discomfort, who cares about his friends and also his teammates. And I'm a great teammate. Part of being a great teammate is communicating, even when it's hard. Sometimes it's telling a guy you play with that he needs to cool off. Sometimes it's telling the goalie he'll have a better game next time. And sometimes it's telling the captain how you feel about his sister. I send her one more text. Wesley, and you don't have to worry about me. I've got this. I drive to Christian's home on California Street, park, and grab the wrapped books. I bound up the steps, take a deep, fueling breath, and ring the bell. I wait, but not impatiently. I'm simply ready. After 20 or so seconds, Christian comes to the door, swings it open, and says, "Hey." It's friendly, but also comes with a question baked in. That's understandable. No doubt he's curious as to why I wanted to meet with him. I nod toward the inside of his house. "Can I come in?" "Yeah, of course." I head into the foyer, glancing down at his socked feet. I toe off my shoes, when in Rome and all. I follow him into the living room that boasts a stunning view of the Golden Gate Bridge. He gestures to the couch. I hand him the stack of wrapped books, then sit. "I realize I never got you a gift when you had your twins. These were my favorite books growing up. My parents read them to me over and over. It's a pretty good series." "Thanks, man," he says with genuine appreciation as he tugs off the ribbon and rips open the wrapping paper, picking up the first one, a warm smile taking over. "If you give a mouse a cookie." He taps the cover approvingly, and that eases any remaining bit of tension in me. I don't hem and haw, I don't search for the right moment. The right moment is now. I go for it like I do when I'm on the rink. "I have a question for you."
"Hit me."
I meet his blue-eyed gaze straight on, no bullshit. "You think I'm a good guy, right?" His brow knits. Down the hall, an infant cries softly, and he holds up a finger.
"Give me 1 second."
A couple minutes later, he's back holding a baby, patting the kid's back, soothing him with a "there, there." It's sweet, this side of the captain I've never seen, the doting dad.
"He's probably hungry, but he might also fall back asleep on me."
"Is that Cooper or Caleb?"
"Cooper,"
Christian says with a holy shit grin, like he can't believe I remembered his kids' names. But his smile erases and he sits again, giving me a serious look.
"You're a good guy."
Grateful, I move on to my next question. It's all part of the plan. "You think I'm a good teammate?" To make it easy, I add, "The kind of guy who has your back on the ice. The kind who would step in for you if you didn't want to talk to the press, who would help you out in a pinch." His forehead knits. He's not dumb. Maybe he's even putting this together. Hard to say. He gives a direct,
"Yes."
There you go. "Good. Because I'm crazy about your sister, and I wanted you to be aware of that." He blinks, furrows his brow.
"You are."
It comes out a little strangled. 100%. I don't need to explain anything more. I've come to realize that just because I'm new to the team doesn't mean I owe him an explanation of the choices I make when I'm not playing hockey, or the choices his sister makes. All I owe him is the courtesy of the truth. But there is one thing I want to underline. Just to be clear, I'm not asking you for permission to date her. Christian swallows, pats his son's back, starts to say something, stops, then says,
"Right, right."
Like he's adjusting to this new world order. Aren't we all? But with all that out in the open, maybe there is one more thing I need to say. Or really, it's something I want to say. To show him that I prioritize her. Because that's what a good teammate would do. She was honestly worried about coming to you, Christian. Worried that you might freak out, team rules and all. I sketch air quotes, then pause, letting that sink in before I say, "But I don't think you'd do that." He gulps, rearranges his face.
"Right. Of course not. I wouldn't."
It's a backpedal, but I get where he's coming from and why he's doing it, so I give him some grace.
"I didn't think you would," I say, even though I had no idea how he'd react.
"I'm just glad I don't play hockey with a douche."
"I wouldn't," he says.
"Good," I say, relieved to have this uncomfortable conversation done. Can't say it was easy, but it wasn't supposed to be.
"I'll see you at morning skate in an hour." "Definitely. Always," he says.
As I push up to leave, I hear laughter, like bells. Then the sound of footsteps as a woman emerges holding a small baby. Christian's wife, Liv. She gives her husband a look.
"Please tell me you didn't pull that don't touch my sister routine."
I smirk as she stares daggers at him. Christian shakes his head several times.
"Not really."
His wife turns to me, lasering her sharp stare my way.
Did he do that?
And because I am a good teammate, I know how to handle this moment too, by having my teammates back. I smile and say, we're all good. Christian meets my face and mouths a relieved thank you. Liv's eyes drift to the table, then sparkle.
Oh, I love these books. I can't wait to read them to the boys. Did you get these, Wesley?
I did.
Thank you so much, she says,
then turns to her husband.
I think the twins are hungry.
That's definitely my cue to go. I point toward the front door. I can see myself out. But before I leave, Christian clears his throat. My sister, Josie, she's pretty cool. She's 5 years younger, and she spent so much time with my aunt while I was playing hockey that there were times when I didn't feel like I totally knew her. But that was because I was busy, not because I didn't want to get to know her. She was also really, really good at taking care of herself. He pauses, his eyes thoughtful. I get the sense, though, that you do know her. There's another pause, a weighty one. And I appreciate that. Thank you. He blows out a breath as he adjusts the fidgety baby in his arms. His tone shifts back to the commanding locker room voice I'm used to at the Sea Dogs Arena. And Bryant, don't be afraid to use your top hand a little bit more when you take a wrist shot. It'll help with control. Instantly, I can visualize holding the stick, lifting it, smacking the puck, as if I'm already practicing the move. I flick my wrist, picturing the path of the shot. Yeah, that does feel good. I'll do that. I appreciate it. I guess that's how team chemistry works. A few minutes later, I'm waiting outside the coffee shop, feeling pretty fucking good as Max and Asher pile into my car with expectant eyes. In the passenger seat, Max peers in my face, studying me intensely. Don't see any new bruises or scars. And you won't, I say. From the back seat, Asher claps my shoulder with pride in his grip. Look at you, man. Look at you. I peer into the rearview mirror doing just that. Yeah, I like what I see. I like it here in San Francisco with my team, my home, my life. There's only one thing I wish California had, a permanent job for Josie. For now, we drive to her library and bring several boxes of books to donate to the children's section, handing them off to Talia. Then I give her a box of a dozen headphones I bought too. I ordered them online for same-day delivery. For anyone who wants to read with their ears but who doesn't have their own headphones.
This is amazing, Talia says warmly. And I promise they will be flying off the shelves and put to oral use.
Glad to hear, I say. And it's time to hustle over to morning skate. But it's also time to see my girl. Yet before I can head up the stairs to the second floor to find my sexy librarian, Josie's flying down them in her pencil skirt and blouse, flats slapping the tiles, hair twisted up. At the bottom of the steps, she's breathless as she says,
How did it go?
Max points at me. He has no bruises.
That's good?
Josie asks with a bright smile. It's her place of work, so even though everything inside of me screams to haul her against me and kiss her senseless, I curl my hands around her waist and drop a chaste kiss to her forehead. You're with me. I can feel her smile against me as she whispers,
I am.
I tear myself away, but not before the sound of clapping rips through the air, chased by a loud wolf whistle.
Told you so, Josie.
It's Eddie, and he's on the stairwell clapping, then turning to Talia.
I was right, boss.
Josie's boss is smiling.
Yes, you were.
Josie blushes.
You did.
And I guess they don't mind a little show of affection, all these book lovers. So I give Josie a kiss on the cheek, savoring her cinnamon scent. Then I go. On the way to the rink, I remind myself to make the most of the next 5 weeks. But here's what I want to know. Does she really have to leave? Chapter 37, The 5 Week Plan, Wesley. The question vexes me as I head to the arena for morning skate, then home afterwards for a pregame nap. Though I'm not sure I'd call it a nap, I doze for a couple minutes here and there, but mostly I stare at the ceiling, wondering. I should feel lighter after talking to Christian. I should be fucking ecstatic. I got what I wanted. We figured this out in a little more than a week. She's not a secret. She's mine. But is she? I want more, and I don't know if I can get it. I know this. I have to try to put these wants out of my mind, or they'll get in the way of my job. After I grab a prepared meal from the fridge and polish off some salmon, asparagus, and pasta, I head to the rink, trying to slough off these thoughts of the future. Dark futures, indeed. As I pull into my parking spot in the player's lot, my phone trills with Eric Bryant Management flashing across the screen. I tense, but it's better if I take the call before the game. Dad's calling from his office, but he is my father. He'd never give me bad news before a game because it might mess up how I play. It's gotta be good news. Hey, Dad.
Hey, son. How's it going?
Great, I say, thinking of Josie this morning and how it felt to embrace her in public. Too bad that's not enough for me since I don't feel great right now. Not that I'd tell him. He doesn't want me to be distracted by romance. What's up with you?
Tip for you for tonight's game. I've been studying the defense on LA, and there's a real weakness on their second line, he says.
And as I get out of the car, he dives into detail on what he's been seeing in tonight's opponent, then with a goalie in particular.
I think you have a great chance to play hard and aggressive and win. Your stats this season are great. I'm thinking we could even get an early renewal.
My heart rate spikes dangerously as I cross the lot. I never let myself think about contract stuff. I am compartmentalized all the way. But now I'm thinking about it, about staying here for a long time, maybe even with her. Yeah? I sound more excited than I want to. I don't like to show too many emotions with him. He'd probably want me to regulate those too. But my dad sounds excited as well.
All that work you've done, your discipline, your training, your conditioning, is paying off. I'll keep studying your opponents. We're going to make this happen.
I'm at the player's entrance, so I should go. But then he says,
and I've got interest in another endorsement deal, a health food chain. Perfect, right?
It is, I say. And truly, it is. There's no sarcasm in my tone. I appreciate the hell out of what he does to make my future possible. And ideally not dark. I say goodbye, but as I go inside, I'm not thinking of hockey or healthy food. I'm wishing it were easy for Josie to get these perks, to land the sort of work she loves as easily as a pro athlete does. Then a traitorous thought crops up. An endorsement deal would more than cover her expenses. I could take care of her. I could make a future for us possible. But I groan privately. I can't buy her to stay. She wouldn't want that. And it's too soon. I'd really better not get distracted. Trouble is, I think about it too much as I get ready to play. When game time nears, I need some new mental tricks to stop thinking about what's next. Shake it off, buddy, I mutter as I lace up. And I do my damnedest to do just that during the game. That night, we lose, and it sucks. My gameplay is weak, I miss shots, I miss passes, and I can't do a damn thing with the tips from my dad or the one from Christian. I'd be an idiot if I pretended I didn't know why. I was in my head tonight. When I get home, I've got to face this mess my brain is making. Overcome a fear. I did it the night at the bookstore when I told her about my dyslexia. I can tell her this one too, that I'm afraid we won't last when she leaves. And I want her to stay. But once I'm upstairs, she's asleep already, and I can't bring myself to wake her up, especially since she's in my bed, not hers. And I fucking love that she came upstairs and made herself right at home where she belongs, with me. My heart squeezes in my chest as I stare at her, her chestnut hair spilled out on a pillow, her black and white glasses on my nightstand, a library book next to them. That's my girl. I lean against the wall and rub my sternum, like I can ease the ache I feel when I look at her. But it won't go away. When she shifts, I hold my breath, hoping she'll rouse. Please wake up, baby. But she sighs softly, flips to her side, and slides deeper into slumber. Enough. I turn away, shed my clothes in the closet, then get ready for bed. When I slide under the covers, she stirs, blinking her eyes open. She smiles, softly.
Rough game,
she murmurs. Yeah, but not for the reasons she thinks. Rough because I was in my head too much. Rough because I was distracted. I'm never distracted. I try to shake it off since tomorrow we leave for a road trip. But I can't let the thoughts go. They eat away at me all night, and in the morning too as she moves around downstairs getting ready for work. I grab my travel bag and head to her room where she's zipping up a skirt that I want to unzip. Focus. I set an arm against the doorframe, then say, hey. She spins around, eyes soft.
Hey.
I don't mince words. What if you stayed? Like, got a job extension? Is that even an option? I sound reckless, but I'm evidently okay with that. She smiles faintly, giving me a glimmer of hope.
I've been wanting to tell you this for a while, but I've been trying for one.
Holy shit. She's on the same wavelength as I am. I feel like I'm made of sunshine. I feel like I could fucking dance, and I hate dancing. You have? Why didn't you tell me? But I'm not mad, I'm elated.
I didn't want to be presumptuous or seem clingy or anything,
she says. Presume. Cling, I command.
I like it here. It'd be great to stay.
But her upbeat expression falters a second later.
It's hard, though,
she says, her lips thinning, her gaze worried.
Talia doesn't think they have the budget to keep me, but I applied for another grant with the foundation that paid for me to be here in the first place.
You did? I can't contain my excitement. Don't want to contain it.
It's a long shot, though, Wes,
she says, playing the realist before she shifts gears slightly.
I've been looking for jobs, though, at other library branches, even in Marin County and San Jose.
I feel 10 feet tall. This is the best news. I'll drive you to work every day, I say.
You can't do that,
she says, laughing. Like hell I can't. Watch me. Just fucking watch me.
I have to get a job first, and it's the end of the year, so there are never as many postings, budgets and all, and hiring slows in December, but I'm applying for everything.
She brightens at the end, giving me a ray of hope, and I'll cling to it. But you're trying, that's what matters, I say. Then I close the distance between us and kiss her goodbye. For a few seconds, I taste salt. Or maybe I'm preparing myself for more of these kisses in 5 weeks' time.
Chapter 38. In My Pole Era. Josie. 1 week turns into another one, then one more. When Wesley's in town, we volunteer at Little Friend's Dog Rescue, transporting dogs to foster homes while they wait for adoptions. Wesley's car has 2 dog beds in the back seat. When he drives, he peeks in the rearview mirror and says things to the passengers like,
you're the best boy.
And,
aren't you a good little cutie?
And,
you deserve all the treats in the world.
He might be at his happiest when he's buckling in rescue pups. It's a pure kind of joy, and it makes my heart sing to see it. Other times we do mundane office chores together, like review applications for adoption. But we split those tasks, leaning into what each of us does best. I read and screen them, then he makes phone calls and vets prospective adopters for the rescue. Soon we'll cross off number 6 officially, and then we'll do number 7, explore a new skill. We debated that one for a while, as I made a list of our options, candle making, cocktail mixing, or pottery classes, while he suggested kayaking, a foraging for food in the woods workshop, and badminton.
You made a list for a list,
he'd said, laughing one night when I showed him my suggestions for number 7. I can't help it if the list is spawning, I said, but then surveyed his choices while tapping a pen against my chin. Sorry, Wes. Kayaking is too cold, the outdoors is not my friend, and I'd get hit in the eye with a birdie.
Let me get this right. You vetoed all mine just like that?
I prefer to think of it like this. I'm letting you pick from my 3 very excellent choices. He laughed.
Good thing I like you,
he said, then leaned down and captured my mouth in a kiss before whispering,
and I'm picking cocktail mixing for explore a new skill, so I can taste the flavors on these perfect lips.
I guess number 7 will be foreplay then, too, I said. But we haven't been able to do that yet, since the next cocktail mixing class that works out for both of us is next week, shortly before Christmas. It can wait, since first Wes has to get through this punishing road trip he's on right now to Minnesota, Chicago, and Calgary. Punishing is right, since they've lost 2 games so far. That sucks, especially since the coach has played him on the first line a few times. But Wesley hasn't talked much about the team or his performance, so I haven't pressed. He gets enough pressure from his dad about his performance and doesn't need it from me. I try to focus on us and making the most of our time together, like when I make plans for number 8 on the list. That's coming around the corner, but it's easy to fit that in when the mood strikes. That might be the one I'm most looking forward to, dancing in the park. It's so seemingly random, but so not. My aunt and I used to do that when I was a kid. She'd take me to the park for a picnic, and we'd run around the slides and jungle gym. The extent of my athletic skills was mastering the monkey bars. Then she'd declare it was time for impromptu dance party, and we danced our butts off in the park, using her iPod and corded headphones, always finishing with Bill Withers' Lovely Day. It wasn't even her favorite song. She told me it was my song. Wes and I will probably tackle that next week, too, since he'll be in town. While Wes is traveling, we text and sext as much as we can. One night in December, I start a new series of photos for him, showing off the shoes I tried on for Everly's class before the internet schooled me. You don't need to wear heels for your first pole dancing class, or your second. That's definitely for the best. They're 7-inch platforms, and it's possible I might die in them. But they do look hot, so I took a pic at the thrift shop, and now I'm sending it along. Josie. I'm in my pole era, or I'm trying to be.
Wesley. I'd like you to be in the wrap those shoes around your man's face era.
My man. Somehow that's what he's become. Mine. Or really, mine for now. Josie. Why am I not surprised that's your first thought?
Wesley. Why would you think I'd think anything else when you send me a photo of you in hot shoes?
Fair point. But where's my pick?
You want to see my shoes. Whatever works for you. I'm on the plane right now in a pair of suede loafers. Cruelty-free suede, of course.
No, I want to see your face. I want to add, I love your face, but I'm careful not to use the L word. I've been careful about the F word, too. F as in falling, like falling for you. But Wes is careful as well. He hasn't said either of those words either. I think I know why. Because of the other 4-letter word, time. There's not enough of it. There's never enough of it. It just keeps marching inexorably forward, and with it, so do the days when I don't hear from the Violet Delia Foundation for Library Digital Empowerment, and when I get turned down from the few openings in the area, and when I don't find any new ones to apply for, and when I want one more and more. Especially when Wes sends me a picture of his face. He's on the plane, resting his head against the window, giving an easy smile. His scruff is scruffier than usual, and his eyes are tired but brighter than when I've seen him on TV playing these last few games. My heart jumps. This is getting to be ridiculous. I'm falling too hard for him. But the look in those eyes tells me he's falling too. How utterly inconvenient. I don't think falling in love for the first time was on my aunt's list. When I'm walking to work on a Tuesday morning, listening